Hey, everybody, it's Thought Crime, and I recap going to Greenland, all of our time on Trump Force One, and should we also take the Panama Canal? That and more. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA, the most important organization in the country, at tpusa.com, and start a high school or college chapter today at tpusa.com. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of the Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Happy Thought Crime Thursday. We have so much to cover, and we have the panel with us. Let me see who I have. I think I have Jack, Blake, and Tyler. Am I right?
What's up, guys? Charlie, how you doing?
Yo.
I guess without even seeing. I got to tell you, I'm getting better at this. I don't even know who I have. The reason I knew that Andrew wasn't on is I just got off the phone with him. So I was like, very unlikely. So, Jack, why don't we start with this? Jack pitched to the we're doing two thought crimes this week. On Monday, Jack said, hey, why don't we do a thought crime on Greenland? I said, no. That'll be later in the week. Jack, manifest destiny topic.
Yeah, so Charlie, yeah, we bring it up, and I was like, oh, you know, and it had been sort of kicking around. Keep in mind, so folks understand the timeline here, this was before President Trump's press conference. So when he went, like, all in on it, and we're all sitting around going, like, hey, you know, what topics do we want to get to? Because there's always a few things we talked to. We ended up talking about the gaycation instead on the last episode. And then I was like, oh, yeah, the whole American expansionism, Fortress America, the new theory, it's been, you know, President Trump's been talking about it. The media's really into it. Let's get to it. And Charlie's like, no, don't talk about it. That we'll talk about it later. I'm like, well, why? He's like, trust me, we'll talk about it later.
It was so great because the time where I'm a producer on Charlie's radio show, and I learned that Charlie was going to Greenland when he sent us the photo of him in Greenland. And I believe that's when Andrew learned about it. I believe that's when everyone learned about it. So Charlie just went and he just absconded on us. And then they were like, hey, Andrew, you're hosting the show. It was a lot of fun. It was very entertaining.
To my credit, though, I was sworn to secrecy. I could have leaked it and all that. It drives me nuts when people do that. So you guys understand, you got to take that stuff seriously. It's nothing personal. You just, you know, there's a lot going into this stuff. And you tell three people who then tell 10 people. And then next thing you know, the New York Times is calling you. So there's some footage of me in Greenland. It was really remarkable. I got to be honest. First of all, this is kind of an unfair question. Has anyone here been to Greenland? Jack actually might have been to Greenland because of his time in the Navy. Jack,
I've been to Alaska, and I've been all the way up in the north of Alaska on the Arctic Circle, but no, I've not been to Greenland. I've been to Iceland.
So it is objectively one of the most beautiful places I've ever been. It reminds me of like deep interior Alaska, like untouched, wild, where you come in contact with God's creation with no filter, a place where there is a town and then there's no connection to modernity from that point forward. I mean, there's polar bears that just walk through downtown Nuuk, which is the largest town in Greenland. That is a great word for it. It is a frontier country territory. We'll get into all the details there. So just kind of some backstory. Don Jr. called me up and he said, hey, do you want to pop on Trump Force One and fly with me to Greenland? I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. So we took off at 2 a.m. Local standard time in Palm Beach. I did one of the things I hate most, which is to fly a red-eye flight. Pretty easy to fly a red-eye flight on Trump Force One, might I add, though. So landed in Greenland as the sun was rising at 11 a.m. local time. Got off the plane. We were greeted by hundreds of people in MAGA hats We went to some of their sacred sites. We went to the top of this hill and took those pictures as the sun was rising. We had an amazing meal with a bunch of local Greenlanders. We went to the local cultural museum and ended the day at one of their top kind of bar hangout, cheers, if you will, restaurants. I learned a lot. Number one, the people of Greenland, they hate the Danes. They hate Denmark. They say that they are mistreated by Denmark. They say that Denmark has lied to them and has really abused them. Number two, there is so much untapped potential in Greenland. There was a young man that came up to me and he said, Charlie, I follow you on TikTok. Let me show you this picture. And it was a picture of him. He said, in my local village, we find these all the time. They are rubies the size of baseballs, guys. I mean, the nickel, the aluminum, the lithium, the rubies, the gold, the natural resources. I mean, it is one of the most abundant natural resource banks or reservoirs, whatever you want to say, on the planet. And the final thing is this, is they love America. They are the power of the power of American culture. MAGA is a worldwide movement. It is transcending borders, largely thanks to social media. So it was a wonderful time in Nuuk. That is how you say it, not Nuuk. It is Nuuk. And honored to have been included in something that very well might have made history. It wasn't a government trip. We didn't meet with government officials. We came as tourists, come to just learn, report back to the people of America of what we saw and heard. Honored to be included in. Would welcome your guys' thoughts.
But you know, that's not the only it's not the only Nuuk in Greenland, of course. Something that, you know, a lot of people don't realize that during the Cold War, this actually was one of the forward strategic bases for U.S. WMDs regarding the threat of the Soviet Union. And really that in any type of strategic intercontinental ballistic missile exchange between the U.S. and Russia or the U.S. and China, it would most likely be over the top. See, people have this view. We're so used to, and this is where, like, I totally went like full schizo Navy officer, like on the show this week, and I had like all the charts out. I was explaining, I'm like, we live on a globe. People need to stop thinking in two dimensions. Yeah, there's the map. Like all of this stuff goes over the top. It is so shorter to travel those distances, the maritime routes. This was the whole reason, by the way, for the endless search for the Northwest Passage, which potentially might be opening up due to advances in icebreaker technology, which, of course, the U.S. is totally lagging behind China and Russia in, and new routes that may be opening up in the Labrador Sea and others, which, by the way, would take maritime shipping in a completely new direction where, guess what, the Suez Canal and the Houthis and the Straits of Malacca and all the nonsense might be completely obsolete within the next 10 to 15 years, not to mention the baseball-sized rubies and all the other natural resources up there. So, I mean, it's pretty clear that over the next century, the race for the Arctic is going to be absolutely massive, and it's just incredible that President Trump is focusing on it the way that he has. And of course, the United States has maintained military presence there since World War II.
So this is something I discovered. Obviously, as you mentioned, the big U.S. base in far northern Greenland, we called it Thule Air Force Base because that's like the old...
Excuse me, it is Thule
yeah,
Air
it is
Force
Thule.
Base.
But the Biden Thule. Administration renamed it to something stupid because they wanted to, like, I think it was like the local indigenous people's name for the area, which, okay, they can call it whatever they want. We call it Thule because Ultima Thule is, you know, a cool ancient Greek concept for the ultra far north. So that's one of the many bases we should probably change the name back to, which this ties into when we were talking about topics. Obviously, we want to talk about Greenland, but President Trump, he's sort of creating this conversation about all sorts of foreign policy stuff, both actual expansionism and, like, I don't know, rhetorical offensive. So he was saying we should rename the Gulf of Mexico. Should we rename the Gulf of Mexico, guys?
Yes. And it
Gulf
turns out
of America.
That my,
I've known about that one for quite a while, and I haven't leaked that one either. So proud of myself.
It turns out that I was looking at this last year, and one of the first posts I was able to find of that was from my brother, like all the way back in like April of 2024, and he was out on a wave runner, and he was like just cruising the Gulf of America. Its new name come 2025. And I was like, Kevin, did somebody like tip you off? He's like, no, I just thought that's what it should be called.
Well, and it makes perfect sense too, because I mean, realistically, most of the Gulf is completely dependent. It's either United States border or completely dependent on the United States for everything.
Well,
so,
if we are going to name things because they're dependent on the U.S., we should rename Europe America.
Well, I mean, I'll just say this. This is why I went on a rampage talking about how Baja California needs to be 100% within our control. And everybody's up in arms because they're like, well, we don't want to make it a state. But it's, you know, the Baja California has like literally outside of the border towns has no population. It's like Greenland.
Yeah, it's a big bummer, actually, because I was reading about this. So in the Mexican War, we actually, Polk wanted to take all of Baja California, or like all of California, because there's Alto and Baja. And then he wanted like Chihuahua, Sonora. He wanted like the states that are south of Arizona bordering us. And at the time, those places were entirely empty. So they could have just been, you know, settled by Americans. They would have been great. And I guess might have been a downer for Phoenix, that whatever Phoenix's equivalent would probably be down in Chihuahua or something. But
no, I mean, no, there's only two cities. It's Tijuana and Mexicali.
Yeah.
Well, wait.
But this goes back to the Gulf. Mexico deserves nothing.
This is my question for you, though, that because we talked about this prior to, I know we talked about this on a prior episode of talking about Arizona. And since you're Mr. Arizona, I got to ask, wasn't there, I'm not looking it up, I don't know if you know it's in front of me, but wasn't at the end, like Blake, you're talking about the Mexican War, U.S.-Mexican War, that Arizona was originally supposed to get coastline. It was supposed to connect all the way down there. And then for some reason, we just didn't take it.
No, so
what was the whole piece?
The whole problem with like State Department diplomats who just, as it were, cuck out. Literally what happened is the diplomat we sent to negotiate in Mexico was opposed to the war and didn't want to take more Mexico. So he sided with the Mexicans and was like, I'm giving you a way better deal. It's the very end of President Polk's term. So he's just like, I want it done. Let's get out.
Well,
and
all they did was minimize. So they minimized themselves, the U.S. border, to where they wanted to put the train.
Yeah.
So
and then we still had to buy it. We had to buy Gadsden later.
Well, that's what I mean. So we're Gadsden. So the first treaty at the end of Polk, they gave away Baja California. But then even in the Gadsden purchase, all they cared about was just getting the train done.
It actually is sort of heartbreaking because when you think about it, zoom out at a big level, how much better would it be for the world just if those territories were in an awesome country like America instead of the most permanently dysfunctional country on earth, Mexico, which whose like sheer amount of mess that it is only made worse by the fact that they have the biggest advantage a country could possibly have, which is sharing a border with America.
Well, so Blake, let's zoom out a little bit because I've been getting people and I've seen this, the chatter online. I'm sure we all have. They're saying, wait a minute, you guys were America first 5 minutes ago, and now all of a sudden you're talking about territorial acquisition, and you're talking about Greenland and the Panama Canal.
Well, Greenland is going to be part of America, so of course I'm America first.
And we have it, right. Yeah. Right, but no, I wanted, what I wanted Blake to do, if we should zoom out here for a second, is none of us view any inherent contradictions between those. So what's the difference between, and this is really a question for Blake, I guess, what's the difference
it's a thoughtful question.
America first versus like neoconservatism?
Well, I think actually a genuinely valid thing is, so first of all, neoconservatism always wants us to get involved in places that like truly are not our business and also have a lot of baggage that comes into play as soon as you decide to stick yourself in. So, it'll be easy to knock out Saddam and, you know, we'll just fix it. When Iraq is literally has had written history for 5,000 years at this point, and all these tribes that all hate each other. And infamously, we went in and Bush didn't know there were Sunnis and Shias as separate things when we invaded Iraq. Greenland, let's be real. Greenland has 50,000 people. It has fewer people. It has half the population of like Tempe. And so it's not a lot of people. We literally, like, if you wanted to, we could literally just, like, put every single person who lives in Greenland on, like, welfare for the rest of their lives, and it would not be the end of the world. We have plenty of people on welfare already.
Well, we did that with some places.
We already do that with, effectively, Denmark by paying for their national defense. And so, like, it is a place that is hugely potentially useful to us, but it doesn't require sticking ourselves in something that actually has an ancient history and a lot of, like, grievance-based, you know, that would have valid grievances if we were to administer it. It's just not like that. It actually is a largely empty place that we could unlock the potential of, and Denmark doesn't want to unlock the potential of it.
I'm going to make it super clear, and then kick back to Charlie, because we've hijacked this away from Charlie for too long here, but we'll kick back to Charlie.
No, this is great. I'm enjoying this.
We went into Iraq and Afghanistan, got nothing out of it.
We only set our wealth on fire.
No, but got nothing out of it. We're talking about, it's not even nearly the same thing. We're talking about going into and really via treaty. Not this wouldn't happen over, right? We have so many pressures that we can put on Mexico, for example, to change names of things and to get more land out of Baja California and to get Greenland and all that, especially what Charlie just mentioned.
Don't you mean Baja America?
Most of these people, Baja California, Baja. Or I think Baja, we should call Baja, it Baja Arizona. Yeah. We'll call it Baja Arizona.
Yeah, Baja Arizona.
California. You guys,
I want to rename the Gulf of California the Gulf of Arizona, but that's a whole different thing.
We should think about that, because you know where California's name comes from? It comes from like the word caliph. So it's literally like a Muslim name.
Yeah, caliphate. California. It's like the caliph. So, yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah, it's true.
That's fascinating.
The word admiral is also an Arabic word, like admiral. It goes through, like, it was from, because remember, prior to expanding to the United States, who was the Spanish Empire mainly fighting? They were fighting the Moors. They were fighting North Africa. So, you know, the caliph was someone that was always their like enemy. So this was something they constantly were talking about.
Well, and so, I mean, we should get something out of this, right? We should get, I mean, they're already dependent. Most of the people probably in Baja California want to be Americans. I mean, Tijuana, Mexicali are completely, they're extensions of San Diego and extensions of, you know, just right over the border. Mexicali, I think, is right next to Blythe that's over there. It's like not far at all, and Yuma. And so it's like, why don't we just have this and actually take monetary advantage of this and monetize the entire place? You know, we'll probably ease off California. California will become less blue. You know, we don't even have to make it a state. Don't make it a state. Make it a territory.
Or we could make it a state and unstate California.
Yeah, okay. Or we could
break up California. Break up.
Yeah,
I would say break. California feels like four states. There's no way that you should be able to fly in a plane for that many hours and then land in the same state. I'm sorry. No, it's just wrong.
Well, interestingly enough, Baja California is two states. So you have Baja California and then Sur Baja California, or Baja California Sur. So, I mean, yeah, I mean, that does open the door, I think, to break up California.
Yeah. So while we're talking about the various things, so Trump has talked about renaming the Gulf. He's talked about taking the Panama Canal Zone back. He's talked about taking Greenland. He's also talked about annexing Canada. And I do think, maybe this is cocky of me, I think I've got to draw the line.
I'm not on board for that one yet.
I do not want to absorb Canada.
Wait, no, but you don't. That's not a cucky reason.
Maybe Alberta.
Because it's the debt to earnings ratio is just not there for Canada. I'm sorry, it's not there, man. Like the baggage is too high. Look, you know, yeah, Alberta, natural resources, the Yukon. We can certainly make all of those conversations, as well as defense of the Arctic, military, you know, military usage and all of those passage rights, which obviously like Canada is like the Belarus of America. All right. Like, we're going to use our military up there however we see fit. And no, I can say that because I'm married to one. It's basically like, yeah, we're going to get the resources. And Pierre, with, you know, eating his little apple, like, sure, fine, like, you could be in charge now, but you know, you're going to be in charge of, like look at the population of Canada. Have you ever looked at a population density map of them? It's like all of the Canadians are hugging the U.S. border as closely as they possibly can. Like, there's massive swaths of just the same as like Charlie was talking about in Greenland. There's massive swaths of territory that are completely unused until they will be used by us.
Maybe that's the way you go about it. Just try to take.
No, please continue, Blake.
I was like, if we could take Yukon, take the Northwest Territory, take like Nunavut, and then take Greenland, and you could just like fold it into Alaska and make this like extremely sweeping, epic, call it like Northlandia or something, or Thule, whatever you want. Think about
Northumbria.
How huge it would be and how cool it would be. And that's another thing where we misfired. After World War II, we owned all those islands in the Pacific. Like, we kicked out the Japanese, all the other colonial powers. We owned, like, Palau, Marshall Islands. Those were all just held by the U.S.
Well, we had the Philippines after the Spanish
and we
had
the Philippines. Whether we give away the Philippines or not, that's its own dramatic thing. But all those Pacific islands, we should like. I think even now, all their citizens can just come to America and be citizens if they want. They're basically fake countries in a lot of ways. I think their main purpose is
Guam. The Chamorros are U.S. citizens.
Yeah, the main purpose of a lot of those islands is so that we have other countries to vote with us on Taiwan stuff and on Israel stuff in the UN. It's great. But other than that, like, we should have really just kept them, merge it with Guam, merge it with the Marianas, and have, like, a Pacifica state. How cool would it be if the U.S. had Pacifica state just spanning the entire Pacific Ocean, and they had Northlandia spanning the north? It would be amazing. We would be the biggest country in the world. We'd be way more cool than everyone else.
Wait, Blake. But remember, when you give an area statehood, they get two senators and a governor. So, no, I'm not interested in giving all of these places statehood. Greenland, yes, of course. But all of them, I don't know. And keep in mind, like, you know, Charlie and Tyler, you know, who's the next Greenland Murkowski going to be? You know, I mean, there's still just because it's a, you know, it's a hardy area, which I think we all realize would probably, we all sort of get, would generally be conservative. I don't know that necessarily means that we get the best representatives.
Well, Charlie can comment
given,
on this. The people there, it's overwhelmingly Inuit, Eskimo, right?
It's like 95%.
Yeah, that's correct. So it's 85% Inuit, and then 15% Dane, of just people that have come over and they help run businesses or whatever. Now, it's an amazing thing. So we went to the Cultural Museum, which I wish I could have spent more time. It was really well set up. And they have these drawings of the people of Greenland that were there like 800 years ago. And it makes you think, like, these people survived a negative 10 degree weather with insanely harsh winds and a very unforgiving climate. Like 800 years ago. I mean, these are tough, tough people. And I know that's not the only culture like that. Alaska has something similar. Northern Canada has something similar. Siberia has something similar. But it was just really amazing. It got a little insight into how tough the people of Greenland actually are. And I did try the local cuisine. I had whale.
Wow.
And a seal.
Was whale so, good? I've heard whale
was it a baby seal? Did you club it to death?
That's a Canada thing.
So no, I did not actually. I did not kill any of the animals that I ate. We didn't have time. However, whale. Someone says, "What does whale taste like?" It's like really chewy steak. That's what it tastes like. So okay. Don Jr., who's an unbelievable outdoorsman, like legit, like no. He said
he's probably
had
like
everything. This whale in Greenland was yeah. He said the whale that he had in Greenland was way better than the whale that he had in Alaska. So for whatever that's worth, the whale in Greenland is quite good. So we tried all the local fare and was really kind of impressed by the people of Greenland. I will also say, though, I mean, this is just a side note. You think about how far does social media reach. There were young people coming up, hundreds of them, asking for selfies from Don and I, saying, "We follow you on TikTok. We follow you on TikTok." I mean, it is a worldwide phenomenon, guys. So let me ask a question, and Blake, Jack, and Tyler. Guys, knowing what you know, and I'm going to kind of just listen because I have my own thoughts, obviously, being on the ground and listening to things. How do you think Donald Trump should go about brokering this deal?
So I threw out on social media yesterday just sort of an opening bid. We all know that President Trump has stated pretty forcefully, even in his first term, that one of the things that he seeks to do with the NATO alliance, which where, you know, Blake just mentioned that we basically foot the bill for all of Europe's defense. And in return, President Trump has been really pounding the table. And of course, there's that famous picture of him with Angela Merkel. And the great Shinzo Abe, the late great Shinzo Abe, you know, crossing his arms and staring at her because he's demanding that the NATO member states up their GDP expenditure on defense to 5%. And I say, well, just give Denmark a break on that for, I don't know, a period of 5 years, 5 to 10 years, call it whatever it is. Boom, all that savings goes right back into your economy. And then in return, we get Greenland. So we don't have to put any cash down on it. And then in return, they get the full defensive weight of NATO and the U.S. military defending them. Simple.
The other idea I've seen is we put tariffs on Ozempic.
Well, if they're wait, Ozempic is Ozempic Danish?
Yeah, I believe Ozempic. What's the
Novo Nordisk?
It is. Novo Nordisk is a Danish company. It is a Danish company.
Oh, it's Novo Nordisk. I think is what it is. Right.
Yeah, I want to double check this to get
it.
That's right.
It is a Danish. I am 100%
sure it is.
And it's like
headquarters.
It's a huge
in...
share of their economy now. It's cartoonish because the company's so valuable now.
It's a multi-trillion-dollar company.
Denmark ain't a multi-trillion-dollar like economy for the most part. So it's just like this little Danish pharmaceutical company.
Let me get this straight. We have the greatest fighting force in the history of the planet: nuclear weapons, F-35s. Drones, Marines, Navy SEALs, they have Ozempic.
Yeah.
Hold on. They also have.
Interestingly enough, too, I think you pronounce it Maersk, is the big shipping company. Is their largest.
Yeah, the shipping company.
So that's their largest.
The Danes have always been the best at shipping.
Yeah, but I mean, the tariff problem for them is much bigger than just Denmark. So I would suspect that
you wouldn't want to put tariffs on shipping because that would directly.
No, I'm just saying tariffs in general probably impact their business worldwide more than anybody else. So you take off the table, you start talking about tariffs, you start talking about taking off the table or adding tariffs to Ozempic, like you mentioned. You know, maybe you can get a deal done real quick for Ozempic.
I just looked up the biggest brands out of Denmark, and Maersk is there. There's also, of course, Pandora. So Pandora Jewelry, based out of Denmark.
When you think about it.
Carlsberg Group. And here's the biggest one, guys. This is gonna hurt. It's gonna hurt them a lot more than it hurts us. Legos. Legos are of course.
Oh yeah, I forgot. Legos are Danish.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Sorry, Lego. Sorry to Legoland. Well, tariffs on all of it.
That's a threat.
Every brick.
If we invaded them, they might like put Legos like on the carpet, and if our guys stepped on them, that would really hurt. That hurts a lot.
That's exactly what happens at my house pretty much every single morning.
Exactly.
Novo Nordisk though has a $372 billion market cap. That's crazy.
Wow. What's bigger than Lego?
I thought it was more than that. I think that if it gets that's right. If it gets on the Medicaid schedule here in America, it will be a $1 trillion company. That is correct. So, by the
They're
way,
to
what a great negotiation tool that we have. Yes. No. It's a huge thing, by the way. It's being debated right now, actually. No. Jack, you look, for children, look up Ozempic Medicaid Congress. It's a huge debate right now. What a great negotiation tool that Trump has. Be like, it'd be a shame if Ozempic was banned in America. It'd be a shame if Ozempic wasn't allowed to be sold here. I mean, you guys want Greenland that bad, or do you want to be able to sell your weight loss drug in the United States of America?
And when you think about it, it could be a great ad.
So let me ask
for
let
Ozempic.
Me ask Blake.
If Greenland loses all of that heavy territory, like Greenland loses 80% of its body mass, it's like an ad for it.
So let me ask Blake. So some people, President Trump has not dismissed the possibility of using military force. Blake, what is your thoughts on Donald Trump just saying, take it?
Okay, you're doing this to make me the bad guy, Charlie. Like, okay, it's fun.
No, I'm not.
I genuinely think...
I'm not necessarily supportive of it. I think that it comes with huge risks to NATO country, but walk us through it. I mean,
okay, so
don't hate... analytically go through it.
For sure. So genuinely, I think it would be good for us to have Greenland for all the reasons we've discussed. I do think you need to convince the Danes to play ball. I don't think it's a good idea for the U.S. to, like, essentially just bully countries out of their territory. Because, for one, think about our overall geopolitical situation of us as a global power. To the extent that we get people to like us rather than China, I think a lot of it is that we are, to some, like, at least a little bit nicer than China. We aren't just taking territories from people. Now, Trump is very firm. We should stop getting ripped off. And I think the Panama Canal is a good example where we built it to Panama for free under an understanding like you wouldn't let the Chinese get this huge influence in it. And I think that's not proving to be true. Like, I would be willing to play some pretty decent hardball there on a canal we built. But like Greenland, we have never actually owned Greenland. We occupied it for a bit during World War II, but we did give it back. It would probably essentially, I think it would greatly damage our relationship with
a lot
of countries
if we invaded
and took a country's territory.
Greenland was right of conquest because Denmark in, 1940, whatever, was occupied by the Nazis and the deposed in exile prime minister of Greenland then signed the Mutual Defense Treaty of Greenland with us so that the Nazis wouldn't be able to use Greenland as a launching platform for the United States or anything like that. So that's when we put our military there. That's called right of conquest. It would not exist. Neither would Denmark exist at this point without the United States of America. So no, absolutely not. No, of course, look, for the Panama Canal, there's no question. Like, here's how this is going to go. We're going to park an aircraft carrier on one end and an aircraft carrier on the other end, and we're going to say, sign the new treaty. And it's going to be pretty simple there. But for Greenland, I would argue that the United States has been providing military defense to Greenland for far longer than a lot of people are pointing out, and in a way that does actually grant us certain rights to it.
So what I will say is, let's say Denmark just says they don't want to play ball, they're not going to sell it. I think the way you go about it, rather than just kick in the door, which I think is a can of worms at least, that would probably not be great, you could just say, we're going to support, like, we back, you know, Greenland separatists, because as Charlie says, you met a lot of people there who don't like the Danes and wish that they could go their own way.
Especially
so you just say, we support Greenland's right to self-determination, and if Greenland were to become independent or break away, we would have an offer for them to join the United States on these generous terms, and we would be happy to welcome them in as a U.S. territory, and if you do that, we'll give you these rights to economic development, we'll give you this, 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 and if you wanted to, you know, become a state, maybe we could even say, if you want to become a state, we'll let you become a state. So I think that's how you go about it, and then you basically, you create the impetus for Greenland to decide that it wants to do this, and if the Greenland people are saying 60% of them, 75% of them say, we'd rather go with America. The Danes they're ultimately Scandinavian. Scandinavian people kind of like classic, you know, democracy that sort of, they're very collectivist. I think it would be very difficult for Denmark to just maintain that they won't let Greenland do it if a very large number of them want to do it. I think that's how you go about it, rather than just say, we're taking this, and if you don't like it, we'll shoot you. I think that would be a bad way to behave with a country that, let's be real, I don't think Denmark has any big problems with us. They aren't the Swedes. They're like the one European country that has real immigration laws. We should encourage them in that venture.
Yeah, they've actually been, isn't Denmark one of the only countries that since 2015 that's actually been participating in some re-migration?
Yeah, they encourage, like, one, they're very clear that people who come here, we actually have to integrate. They've passed laws to, like, break up so that you don't have migrant ghettos, for example. Like, you can't have all the people living in one neighborhood where they don't assimilate to Danish norms. And they're paying people to go back. They've been aggressive. And what's really interesting is they've done that without having a right-wing government like you'd have to have. Like, the Danes are the one place where, we've said this before, if the left figures this out, we could be in trouble. They're the one place where the left figured out, if we just become anti-immigration, we'll win lots of elections. And so it's the left-wing party in Denmark just said, okay, we're going to cut immigration, and they win their elections and they do just fine. And Denmark will continue to exist as a country as a result.
So we all agree. We're getting Greenland.
We're getting Greenland. Let's go.
Let's now move to the DE. Now let's go to DEI fire. Now, in some ways, the Charlie Kirk show today was a little bit thought crimey. I mean, here's how you know that you are over the target. When you say stuff on the Charlie Kirk show that otherwise should be said on Thought Crime, and not one Media Matters article is written up. Blake sent me one of the most, I cannot believe this has not gotten more coverage, for the record. I don't know why this particular thing is so bothersome. Los Angeles, who's burning right now, dear friend of mine, Stacy, friend of ours, her house burned down. It's awful. We know so many people have. Los Angeles has three police chiefs that are all named Kristen, and they're all lesbian. And there's a fourth who's also lesbian, but she's not named Kristen. Or whatever. Sorry, fire chief. Blake, is this true? Is this some sort of a troll?
Yeah, so it literally is. Let me bring it up here because we have to get the thread here. Let's see. All right, yeah. So what it is basically to rise high in the LA Fire Department, you basically have to be a lesbian named some variant of Kristen. So first of all, we have Kristen Crowley. So she is the first LGBTQ fire chief of definitely LA, maybe of any large American city. I don't know. I don't track that. And she says one of her top missions is to create systemic equity and inclusion across the LAFD. She created a new DEI bureau within the LA Fire Department. So great, great use of money there. There was a great meme I saw the other day. It's the, have you guys seen that meme? That's like the guy sitting, standing in the corner at the party. That's like, they don't know that I'm, and she's like, they don't know that I'm a lesbian. But then the room is on fire. And I was like, I'm on fire. That's one. Second, we have Christine Larson. So she's the first equity bureau chief of the, okay, that's, whoops, I read them out of order. That's Christina Kepner who's on screen. She's just a assistant chief. So she's lower tier, but she is named Christina, which is important.
What's going on with her hair?
Oh, what's going on with her hair is she like buzzed it. What's going on with her eye is she was involved in a domestic violence dispute. She apparently made murderous threats towards her spouse or partner or whatever, alleged, I should say. So there was a domestic violence spat between this beautiful, diverse person at the LAFD. She has a certificate. I'm not making this up. I checked the LinkedIn. She has a certificate from the Harvard Kennedy School for managing diverse organizations, which is a certificate you can get.
Very useful.
And then now the third one, we have Christine Larson. She is the first lesbian equity bureau chief. She is the co-founder of the group Equity on Fire, which is a great organization name. That originality to come up with that is probably why she's paid $400,000 a year. And she basically like would get in the news saying like there is a big racism and sexism problem at the Los Angeles Fire Department. So they were like, okay, we'll make you the equity bureau chief, get paid $400,000. And I think we have this clip. Angela, what's the number on it where she's talking about rescuing someone from a fire? She has this great take on, oh yeah, people say women aren't as strong. They're not as capable of, say, fighting the fire or pulling a person out of the fire. What's the number on that clip? 141. Let's play it.
You want to see somebody that responds to your house, your emergency, whether it's a medical call or a fire call, that looks like you. It gives that person a little bit more ease, knowing that somebody might understand their situation better. Is she strong enough to do this? Or, you couldn't carry my husband out of a fire, which my response is, he got himself in the wrong place if I have to carry him out of a fire.
That's exactly what I want to hear from a firefighter.
It reminds me of in Houston.
Help me, help me. Wait, you got yourself in the wrong place.
Yeah, yeah. You're just calling, I'm on fire. Ain't nobody got time
for
that.
Like, are they like trolling victims?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Well, when you type into Google right now, DEIF, the first things that come up, DEI Fire Chief, DEI Fire, DEI Fire Chief Los Angeles, DEI Fire Department, DEI Fire California, I mean, this is not just trending. This is like taking over everything DEI related is now. If you just type in DEI, now it's DEI Fire, DEI Chief. I mean, this is everywhere.
It's truly mind-boggling to like see this happen because I feel like a lot of us warned about this for ages, like how this goes. It's not you just like, you know, hit a light switch and everything's bad. What's so bad about DEI is it's this corrosive rot that's super easy to just miss as long as nothing really bad is happening. And, you know, most of the time we've gotten better at fighting fires. Buildings are more fireproof. Our techniques have improved and there's just not always a really bad fire. So you can go years where you have a fake fire department and you're not going to notice a big problem. And it only comes out now when finally there is the sort of crisis you only get every, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 50 years hitting Los Angeles. And you need to have those strong institutions in place. And instead, you have a fake fire department. You have a fire department that exists to give astonishingly well-paid jobs and astonishingly well-funded pensions to these like freaks who can't do the job and get angry if you tell them to do the job and give you a political lecture. And they just exist to soak up public money in this sick way. And we're seeing this, and as I was saying, it's the rot that happens in every little spot. So I've talked to people who say, what caused this to happen? And it's not that there is one cause. It's for decades, Los Angeles has had a set of values that made it so everything there is a little bit worse. So, you know, go throughout the process. This was probably a fire started by arson. Well, a lot of fires are started by homeless bums, either because they're crazy or because they have illegal campsites. And a lot are also started by illegal immigrants. A surprising number of fires, illegal immigrants just start them. And so what place is the most pro-bum and pro-illegal immigrant in the country? California. So that's, you're more likely to have randos start fires there. Then you have, okay, how well are you able to respond? Like, how good are people at spotting the fire, calling it in? How quickly does the fire department respond? That's where the rot in the actual fire department comes in. They're just not as on the ball at responding to the fire, containing the fire. And then you have, well, okay, what do we fight it with? Well, we need water. And, well, we have assets that they sent to Ukraine. We have budget cuts that they reallocated towards DEI, both in terms of they cut the LAFD's budget and they moved budget within the LAFD to their new DEI bureau. And then they also just made it illegal to collect water in California. They have literally disassembled dams that existed to make reservoirs. They have let rainwater wash out into the Pacific Ocean uselessly because they say it helps, like a delta smelt or whatever the heck the names of these fish are. It's every step of the way, California has done a thing that makes them 1% or 2% more likely for this to happen. And now, as a result, we're just going to burn down the nicest neighborhood in Los Angeles. Good job, everyone.
Do you think people are going to move out? Jack, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to bring up that all of this just reminds me, and we on Human Events today, we were getting into the movie Chinatown, which I don't know if people know about, but it's this old Jack Nicholson movie, just incredible film. And the whole thing is about the Los Angeles, California water
wars. It's a great film.
And we've got this clip on it where basically it's talking about how the water supply is used by the elites in California, and of course, you know, and highly stylized in this murder plot decrease property values so that the developers can come in and purchase all of it and then increase it when they put the water to it. So let's play clip 142.
Gonna be a lot of irate citizens when they find out that they're paying for water that they're not gonna get.
Oh, that's all taken care of. See, Mr. Gitz, either you bring the water to L.A., or you bring L.A. to the water.
Go home, Jake. I'm doing you a favor. Come on, Jake. Forget it, Jake. It's Chinatown.
So good.
Forget it, Jack. It's DEI town.
Ah, and for longstanding thought crime viewers, you might also recognize that the villain there is played by John Huston, who he himself is the father of Danny Huston, who also plays the developer who is the main antagonist of Yellowstone. So you see, it all comes full circle, folks. The Yellowstoning, the Hicklibs, the California water wars, it's all indelibly tied together. It's this really cool way to look at basically understanding how our world works through the understanding of Hollywood propaganda and the deconstruction of it.
I know this is kind of a very simple question and kind of cliche. Do you think this will result in any political changes? Tyler, you're the political guy. Is this going to result in any political changes in California?
Yeah, I saw something really interesting that someone mentioned today, which was, I think somebody sent it over. I think it was, what's his name? Radio show host in California that was best friends with Jimmy Kimmel. Why am I spacing right now? Adam Carolla. Yeah, Adam Carolla made a good point that people are going to want to rebuild that area very quickly. And there's a lot of libs that live in there that are, touchy-feely libs, you know, that are down on the coast that are in that area. And they're going to be
weaponize, like, the California permitting process.
They're going to have to go through that process with all the local permitting, everything. And they're the organic, natural episode that's going to happen is that all these woke lib feel good, you know, coastal Californians are going to get so mad at the government with what they're going to have to do to rebuild that all it's going to make them hardcore right wingers.
I mean, it is really crazy when you read about, have you heard of the California Coastal Commission?
Yep.
It's like, it's almost like the comparison that comes to mind is actually like the Federal Reserve in a weird way, because Federal Reserve is not, you know, is independent and they kind of just do their own thing. And even the president currently sort of just has to look and be like, okay, the Fed, you know, Trump will go on Twitter and nag the chairman of the Fed to do something because it's an independent agency and Trump wants to change that, of course, but that's the way it is currently. And it's like the same thing, I believe, with the CCC. They're basically this rogue entity that has legal imprimatur to essentially make whatever law they want over anything concerning California's 1,000-mile coastline. And so they've just gone out and they're like, oh, yeah, we're just going to ban, you know, building anything in this entire area.
And to make the comparison, Charlie, to Hawaii, there's not that many people that live where the Lahaina incident happened in Maui. There is a ton of people who live within that immediate geography of where this has happened. And so you're going to have a lot more vocal, a lot more angry, a lot of wealthy people who have a lot to lose, generational type wealth that's been basically cemented into that part of the country, that they're going to be in all out war with the government. And just like you're mentioning, like this is like we're talking about made up, you know, fictitious type California style government that's down the coastline. And, you know, we're joking about Baja California and everything else, but like this is going to be something that I think is going to be a real big break in politics in Southern California. That's going to force not just from the and don't forget, the coastline is where it's the deepest blue.
Yeah.
You have the deepest blue, the wokest, the most, you know, white.
Like, put that up on screen. Put up the precinct map.
Oh, yeah.
The most.
Keep going, Tyler.
The saddest, feeling bad about being white. A lot of Jewish heritage that's there, a lot of money that's there, that they're already were on the verge of flipping. We saw a lot of these areas go tremendously right, tremendously pro-Trump this last election. This may be the straw that breaks the camel's back that sends Southern California into a 20-30 year slide that may be where people don't forget this for a long time, between COVID policies and then this, where, you know, you might win back big chunks of Southern California that we've lost, you know, for the last 20 years.
So just to get back on that, specifically the California Coastal Commission, this is something there, this, because all news ends up going back to the same person. They're actually in a feud with Elon Musk right now because the U.S. government wanted to launch more satellites from Vandenberg Space Force Base in Southern California to put up satellites for Starlink. And, you know, it's good for us to launch satellites into space. And the California Coastal Commission shut this down because apparently they just have the power to do this. And they issue statements. The commissioners just come out and say, yeah, we don't want them launching it because we don't like Elon Musk. I'm not making this up. This is an actual statement. Like, Commission Chair Carol Hart said, this is why. We're dealing with a company, the head of which has aggressively injected himself into the presidential race. And then we have Mike Wilson, also a commissioner. This company is owned by the richest person in the world with direct control of what could be the most expansive communication system on the planet. And this man has talked about political retribution. So we have these political lunatics who just took over this independent commission, and they basically just have decided they have veto power over doing anything or building anything within, you know, like 3,000 feet or something, or like 3 miles, something like that, of California's coastline. And yeah, you're right. They're probably going to try to do, even if they aren't right now, there will be people who will try to manipulate this process. California is one of the worst states in the country for, you know, clogging things up with lawsuits. Even if California tries to open the way, there will be some environmental group that will say, oh, yeah, there were grandfathered things where, like, you were allowed to do this because your house was 100 years old. Nope, doesn't apply anymore. We're not going to let you build this. There's an endangered, you know, newt that grows on the side of this mountain.
Well,
it's going to be crazy.
And Charlie, we talked about this morning. We talked about the trifecta that California's been in with Democrats for so long. This California Coastal Commission could very well end up being at the epicenter, but it's not just that. I mean, it's so far beyond that with the Senate, the assembly that they have there, the governor, who, by the way, has political aspirations to be president. You know, the California Coastal Commission is made up of people who are appointed by the governor and the Senate, and the state and the assembly. That's who makes it up. And they've been run by Democrats. So they, those people take direct orders. Everything you just said is basically the voice box of Gavin Newsom, because they take direct orders from these people. They don't hop, skip, or jump without running it by the Senate, the assembly, because they could get yanked or replaced probably pretty quickly. This is going to be a huge, I mean, I think that this disaster is probably going to be one of the most costly disasters that we see in the modern times by, this, by the time this thing is done. And you're going to, the impact that's on Gavin Newsom is insane. Like, yeah. It's he can't run for president now.
Yeah. I need to talk about the Rumble Cloud. Are you tired of getting a surprise when you see your cloud services bill every month? Our friends at Rumble have done it again. The new Rumble Cloud services are coming this spring. Rumble has built the cloud for the parallel economy. The disruptive Rumble Cloud pricing model will blow away big tech clouds with big savings and more predictable budgeting. And like Rumble Video, you don't have to worry about the cancellation on Rumble Cloud. Remember what happened to Parler? Exclusively for friends of Rumble, sign up today at friends.rumble.cloud and receive 30% off the first 3 months of your cloud compute subscription, which will be available for purchase later this quarter. Rumble Cloud Services are the essential cloud services you need for any size business to innovate and grow. Head to friends.rumble.cloud and sign up today. Okay, guys, email us freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you guys for listening. Till next week, keep on committing thought crimes. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us, as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening, and God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.